Hey, my name's Paul. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Paul.
I will not crack coffee either. Thank you for the opportunity to be here, Jeff. I'm from Atlantic City, New Jersey. Congratulations to all you Eagles guys out here. I know I'm in the homeland. I am a Raiders fan myself. So I told my friend Rick yesterday, thank God I'm sober because I can appreciate, I'm happy for you guys. I was incapable of that a few years ago. So I'm glad I'm sober while you guys won. I was separated from alcohol May 4th, 2009. I was born in Atlantic City. I grew up in a town about 5 miles south of Atlantic City before the casinos in Margate. I'm sure somebody in here has drinking in Margate before. I'm almost positive of it. It's like a shore drinking town. There was the beach, and then like four blocks in was the bay. And in that area, there was like 10 different bars in a four-block radius. And I grew up in a small duplex with no air conditioning, the windows open, and like 90 degrees in the summer. And we would listen to the bars get out at like 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning, and bottles breaking, fights breaking out, cop car lights going around. And I'd stare out the window, like mystified by all this. And essentially, I had a father who was an alcoholic. I do not blame my alcoholism on him, but it does play a part. And when I get to my fourth step, I'll probably touch upon that. And I had a brother who was older than me by like 6 years. So I had an older brother who was like more like a fear figure. Like he helped me like learn some sports and stuff. But he wasn't like a best friend, you know what I'm saying? So that dynamic was set up. He was like, I was always like nipping at his heels, and him and his friends, and I don't know if anyone's a wrestling fan here, but I was in like every single WWF submission hold known to man growing up. And between, you know, that dynamic and like I had a father who I was scared to death of. And when I was young, my father passed away when I was in second grade. He went to the doctor, he had a pain in his back, and 2 months later, he passed away of lung cancer. And so I had a mother, this beautiful woman, really quiet, like, you know, she was married to an alcoholic, and they didn't know anything about alcoholism, so she was like probably a grade-A Al-Anon, who never got the treatment she needed. So she had to fend for herself once he passed away, and she had to work, and she took whatever she could get. And my brother was in high school, I was in grade school, and a lot of babysitters. And I'm setting this up because I spent a lot of time alone. Nobody ever talked about that. Once he passed away, there was no like emotional connection. There was no like discussion. Like, how do you feel about anything ever? It was just like it never happened, and we just kept on going because that's pretty much how it was like while he was alive. It was just no one talked about anything. We just sucked it up and kept going. And so the casinos opened, and my mom got a job at the night shift. And so as soon, like babysitters, as soon as I was free enough to do anything, I was climbing out windows. I was running the streets at night till 1 in the morning. She'd get home from work. I wouldn't be home. I was in grade school, and I didn't understand. I didn't understand what's the big deal. Like, I felt safe, capable, and like I was having fun, and I thought everyone was overreacting. And that would set the tone for essentially my attitude and my existence. And that's pre-alcohol. So, like, I was just defiant. You know, once that, I had been suppressed for so long that I remember, like, the second that I was out from the hand of anybody, I wasn't listening to anybody ever again, and everybody could go pound sand, for lack of a better term. So then I discovered alcohol, man. And I discovered I had it. Essentially, I worked on one of the docks. People would come down and rent these little boats and go crabbing and fishing and stuff at the beach. Some of y'all might have done it. And I cleaned the boats. I was 13, worked under the table for like $3.25 an hour. And we'd get all the extra beers that the guys would come home with. And so we'd start, you know, I'd start drinking that way. And essentially, like, puberty, I was kidding around, like, they try to educate you and, like, ask you what your life's ambitions are and everything, like, while puberty's happening. And Like, I started drinking and becoming interested in girls and music simultaneously. And education and authority and anything like that that wanted to stop me from doing what I wanted to do was in my way. And it just wasn't going to happen that way. So my mom did the best she could. I went to Catholic school my whole life, like 1 through 8. And I got to Catholic high school and I failed religion. I failed Spanish twice. I failed, barely passed math. You know, I had to go to summer school. I just didn't care, but I was a straight-A student up until I flipped this switch. I remember where I was when I flipped it. I was bored with life. I was restless, irritable, and discontented, and I was young. And I was like, being a good guy isn't really working for me. I'm going to see what the bad kids are up to. And I just kind of made a right, and I never looked back. And and I'm just setting all that up, like I said, with the mother who I could overpower, the father who was missing, and having this these resentments that I didn't even know I had with kind of being suppressed my whole life, set this like atomic alcohol bomb up. And so then I discovered alcohol. And I simply just was not a shy person anymore. I remember going to keg parties and going right to the keg and not being able to talk to anybody, like being paralyzed with fear, having like 3 drinks. By the time I peed for the first time and came out, the whole room was different. There was like a glow to it. Everybody was my best friend. I just kind of lofted in and out. And then sooner or later, a girl thinks you're cute. And before you know it, everyone's going to college. And I don't care about college. Those 4 years went by in a blur. It essentially was just booze, reasons to drink, and shits and giggles. It's a rite of passage, right? So I'm surfing at this time. I was pretty much competing. I was sponsored. I was pretty good at what I did. I grew up on the beach, so I was always in the water. And slowly, like senior year, so I just stopped caring. And alcohol gave me this delusion that it was helping me. You know, I mean, I was getting girls I couldn't have got without alcohol. I was making friends I couldn't have made without alcohol. I was having crazy stories I never would have had without alcohol. And funny enough, I'd get, you know, I was competing and I had these guys that I was always up against. And I always got 3rd place. And it used to piss me off because I thought I was better than everybody, naturally. And one time we drank all through the night at my friend's house. And I'm super hungover. And I'm in my car smoking Camels with the heat on. It's the dead of winter. And I felt awful, man. I could barely breathe. And I go out in the water, and I'm so out of breath, I'm letting guys catch waves. Like, I'm just giving up waves. I normally would have been so self-centered, and there's no way I would have let you in on any of them. I was just, like, letting them go. Like, just go. Just, you have it. You go. You know what I mean? And then I'd catch one when it was, like, when it was just perfect timing. And I wound up winning this contest. And I got my 1st place trophy. So again, like, I was under the delusion, and alcohol was helping me. Alcohol was helping me. Everywhere I went, things were better because I was drinking. And so everybody got out of school, and I worked like 3 jobs. And I hung out with dudes who were pretty, I don't know the term you would use, criminal-minded. And they managed to somehow, allegedly, got a bunch of fake IDs from the DMV that were real New Jersey licenses. And the whole area in my neighborhood had real licenses that all said we were 21 years old. We were all like 18. It got so bad, like little, like sophomore girls who were like 16 had them. So the FBI finally came in, but I was down the road by the time that happened. And I went, we bought a van and I traveled the country surfing. And went to Hatteras, went down to Florida, went over to California, went into Mexico, back to California, back to Florida. And I lived in this van for like 8 months with a fake ID. I had a bank account because I worked my tail off. I didn't mind working. I was just alcoholic. And so it was like a great life experience. It gave me, you know, a sense of satisfaction, I guess. I don't know. A sense of self. And I went back to college after that, and I lasted 2 weeks. I just, authority was just ridiculous at that point. I was incapable of it. But what happened was, and that's pertinent because I was 19, running around the country with his fake ID. If there were no waves, at like noon, I would skateboard to the liquor store, and I'd get a 12-pack of Busch and a pack of Camels, and I would go to the pool and I would start my day. You know what I mean? And it's 80 degrees. I'm living the dream. And this guy who happened to let us run an extension cord in his driveway out to the van, living the dream. He's looking at me at the pool one day, and I don't know anything about anything. And he's like, he just discovered Alcoholics Anonymous, and he's sitting here looking at me, and he's like, Paul, why don't you come to an AA meeting with me? And I thought he was crazy. Dude. I was like, what? But I respected him. I really did. He was a great guy, and I had nothing else going on anyway. So I went to a noon meeting in Cape Canaveral, Florida when I was 19 years old. And I remember I just felt like a wet cat, man. Like, I just wanted to get out of that room before it even started. And I was like, give up beer? Like, what? Like, I couldn't even comprehend it. And I left. But I got one of those white poker chips that they give in Florida. And I carried that thing around with me for 15 years. I had this tackle box of all these junk trinkets and stuff I would just drag around me wherever I moved because I was always running from myself. And that poker chip, man, I swear to God, went with me everywhere. And at one point, I didn't even remember where I'd gotten it. I had to get sober to, like, recall it. And so, long story short, I leave Florida, and there's, as you can imagine, like most of us, there's way too much stuff to even cover. I turned 30 like that. I got into music. I went from surfing into music, and I suffered from delusions of grandeur with that. Bill talks about men of genius. I used artistic license as an excuse to get obliterated constantly. Daily. I fell under the delusion that I was incapable of accessing the creative parts of myself unless I was inebriated and or under the influence of any and all things. And I spent literally from 20 to 30 moving mounds of dirt and mulch from one pile to another, spreading it out and drinking and smoking weed, like literally for 10 years solid. And having band practice at night. Or some form of it. So, like I said, like all of a sudden, you know, this thing we learn about, we come in here, this phenomenon of craving, you know, these terms that I don't know about, and an allergy to alcohol. You know, I had my first drink pretty young, and I remember after my first drink, I wanted a second drink. And I remember after my second drink, and I don't remember being bombed, annihilated, like I fell off a cliff. I just remember I wanted another one, you know what I mean? And it was really subtle. It was so subtle, I thought it was my idea. you know? and I've heard many speakers say the third one just kind of reaches for the fourth one takes the fifth one. And before you know it, I'm a 12-pack drinker, and I'm really no more quenched or less thirsty than my third beer. And it's just a matter of, you know, whatever, rinse and repeat. And so that's what I mean by, like, I just turned 30, you know? Like, I had all kinds of crazy stories and late night bar stories and waking up in weird places or not going to sleep or all the stuff we do, you know? But during that time, like up to like my late 20s, around 30, I'd get tired. You know what I mean? And I started getting a beer belly because I was drinking like 2,000 calories a night. And I get tired, you know, mentally, I don't know what's happening, but that's wearing me down, you know? And I'm getting fatigued. I'm not bouncing back the way I used to bounce back. I'm getting some mental and emotional problems that I didn't have. I don't know how I got here, but I'm here. I don't know how to get out, but I don't know. I'm surrounded next... All the people next to me seem to be muscling through it, so I just keep muscling through it. And so let me just, I lost my track. We're going to the young 30s. If I just had this, I'd be happy. I got a landscaping thing. I did that for like a decade, maybe a dozen years. And then I just took a straight job screen printing T-shirts. And I was really under the delusion that I was, like, going to be on some rock star trip. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I just had more time, you know, to myself to write and play, you know, I'd be able to pull off the things that I want to pull off if this day job wasn't in my way. You know, my car is, like, held together with, like, duct tape. You know, I'm spending my, I have two credit cards that are like 10 grand in a hole. Just for not, and not, like I said, I didn't fall off a cliff, man. This happened incrementally. Like, that credit card started out with a $100 balance. You know what I'm saying? And I remember then I'd get drunk and buy dinner, and then I'd, you know, not be drunk and need to get drunk, and then I need cigarettes because I just need cigarettes. So I'm just piling on, you know, it's, all of a sudden it's 10 grand. And so now I got these bills I can't pay. I'm just broke. I'm busted, you know. And I'm muscling through every day. I'm drinking Gatorade. My eyeballs falling out of my head trying to get to work on time. And it's just normal. That's just what my life has become, you know. I have this thing in here. I was just talking with a guy yesterday. You know, the doctor's opinion is amazing because there's so much stuff in here. You know, I can't differentiate the truth from the false. You know, like, what for me, that looks like a lot of different things. But, you know, once drinking more frequently, the behaviors and the thinking become common daily occurrences. You know, actions, relationships, moods, beliefs, based on alcoholic thinking. It becomes who I am. But I really wasn't that guy to begin with. You know, my sponsor has this thing where his sponsor told him, you know, in the beginning, there was the Paul that God made. And then there's the Paul that Paul made. And that was my alcoholic thinking, you know. And the work we're going to do here is going to bring me back, hopefully, to the Paul that God made. You know, there may be some scars. However, they'll be useful in helping others. And so I'm like, if I just had money, everything would be good. Everything would be great. Third step. I used to say that at work when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I read the third step. If everybody would just do what I said, everything would be great. Like, I used to say that all the time. So God bless her. My grandmother's 91 years old and she passes away, right? My grandfather had made sure that she was going to be okay. Something had happened. She was 91. She passed away. So he had invested all these stocks and bonds back in God knows when, and they matured. And I inherited a lot of money for anybody, let alone an alcoholic in his cups, who didn't even have any idea he was an alcoholic, knew nothing about the first drink, knew nothing about, like, when I stopped drinking, I was miserable, you know what I'm saying? And that's what I lost my train of thought earlier before. There were times where I'd get tired and stuff, and I would quit drinking, right? I'd be like, yeah, I got to reel it in, man. I'm done drinking for a minute. And like 2 weeks would feel like 6 months. You know what I mean? Like, seriously. I would, like, maybe wash the car, clean my room or my apartment up, you know, maybe do some exercise for like 3 days, cook myself some meals, you know, maybe rent some movies, you know, whatever the hell sober people did back when I was 20 years old or 30 now. And I would give it the old college try. And after like 2 weeks, I'd be like, I'm good, you know, like, point made, I'm going to go get a six pack of, I'm going to drink like an adult, you know, I go get like an $8 six pack of beer, one six pack, and I'd mosey home, and I'd work all day, and I'd come home, and I'd be like, give myself three beers, I can have three beers, no problem, you know what I mean, and I'd open the first one, and it'd been like 2 weeks, so that thing tasted pretty damn good, if I recall correctly. And so I'd get, like, almost done it. And like, I just remember being like, oh, I can have a second one, you know? And I'm not even halfway done the second one. And I'm worried about the third one. You know what I'm saying? And can I make it to sleep? But is there going to be a space between the third one and when I go to sleep? Like, how am I going to spread this out? And I don't know anything about that. Like, I don't know that that's alcoholism. I don't know that's, like, a serious problem. You know what I mean? It's stupid. It doesn't mean anything at the time because I'm under the delusion that this is normal, you know? So, of course, the next night I have four. because the night I had three, nothing bad happened, like Jim. And then after two nights of having, or one night probably, I had five, and then I drank the six-pack, and then I don't want to go to the liquor store every day, so I might as well buy a 12-pack, and that'll last me two nights. And then I get a 30-pack, because, once a week, during the week, 30 beers should last me from Monday to Friday. You know what I mean? And that lasts me 2 days. And before I know it, I'm throwing shots in there. Before I know it, that never happened. And like I said, so now I'm in my young 30s. I inherit this money. And I don't need to tell you what happened. You know what I mean? It's only by the grace of God that I'm here. It got crazy. It got straight up crazy. I was living that way without money. you know what I'm saying? So I'm spending a lot of money every day. And I don't know, man. It just got crazy. So everything you can imagine. I wound up, let's just go to the end. I wound up at the end of my drinking. I was back in New Jersey. I had went across the country a few different times in a few different ways. I wound up in an apartment my mom had put me up in, literally coming out of both ends for like months. I would just wake up and start drinking Natty Ice, and I'm rolling cigarettes. My fingers were like brown. I didn't care about food. I had two different girlfriends. One was unhealthier than the other one. And I would switch SIM cards. I'd like start my day, be like, I'm never talking to that girl again because she's nuts. And then after 3 hours, this one would be calling the cops on me. So I'd run over to that one's house and be like, I'm never talking to that one again because that one's crazy. And then every day, I did it every day. And it's ridiculous. So like I said, I got coming out of both ends. I had a son at this time in Florida who I had not seen in 4 years. I was armed and dangerous. Me. Right? No malice, just stupid. I was literally armed and dangerous. in so much debt, it was ridiculous. I was destitute. I was picking cigarette butts up off the street, panhandling, running with people, dude. Like, I started drinking on the beach, like at lifeguard parties with kegs, dude. You know what I mean? And where I'm wound up. It's phenomenal. It's unbelievable. And it's only by the grace of God and a loving mother who has a big part in this hand of me being here today that I'm even alive. So hopefully that qualifies me as a guy who had a problem with alcohol, and we can move into the recovery aspect of this. So I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I think I'm 37. I'm 36 years old. So I got to be 36 for 2 years. I found out how old I was when I got sober. That's what it was like. And so there's this place. I had twisted myself up really good, man. I had some, I'm still recovering. Some serious anxiety, mental, paranoia, all kinds of shit, man. I was a mess, right? So I got sober at this place at a graveyard and a stairs going into the basement for the meeting. Thank God, because if it was any different, I don't know what would have happened because I was so scared of people. I didn't know anyone in my own hometown. That's how messed up it was for that long. It's just crazy. So I walked down the stairs in this meeting, and thank God they read out a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. My first experience in an AA meeting willingly was reading Doctor's Opinion, more about alcoholism. It was fun. For me, it was fun. I identify with the literature. I thought I was the most unique guy in the history of the world. And I'm a textbook alcoholic, man, turns out. You know what I mean? Everything that's wrong with me is right here from 1939. I swear to God, I thought I was the most unique guy in the world. And I'm just a textbook dude. So I read in the doctor's opinion, and I see frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. And I knew about that because I had a mother who would just look at me and start weeping. I had a son I hadn't seen in 4 years. That bothered me every day, man. Especially a guy who's like dad issues, you know? Like, it killed me to not be there. But I couldn't do nothing about it. I was beyond human aid. And I know not everybody's like that, but I can tell you that this didn't happen to me overnight. You know what I'm saying? I always kid around, when I introduce myself a lot, I'll say, you know, I'm an alcoholic of a hopeless variety. And my sponsor says, I don't know of any other kind. You know, I mean, it's a progressive illness, you know? So, I love in the Living Sober, there's a line, like, if you're on a train bound for 1,800 miles away, if you don't get off, that's where you're going to wind up, you know? and I get that. But anyway, fall through emotional appeal seldom suffices. And then I read the Jaywalker. You know, I didn't know what AA was going to be like, you know. So for me, I just got done doing all this stuff. So it's like, there was a relief for me in, people saying things about drinking. Like, I was under this belief that I was, like, some kind of mental or moral leper or something. Like, I couldn't quit drinking, so I'm a total POS. You know what I mean? Like, and here, this book, what I got out of it was, like, of course you couldn't quit drinking. You know what I mean? This is why. Look, no way you're getting out of this. If you're a real alcoholic, this is what happens. This is why it happens. This is how it happens. And I'd bounced in at a psychiatrist's office, dude, from my mid to late 20s. Because, like I said, I started just getting twisted up. I couldn't even verbalize what was wrong with me. You know, I couldn't even. They tried to tell me, and I just knew that they weren't right. You know? And, I was just always, like, miserable and angry. I just had no idea what the hell was going on. And a woman, my therapist, would try and tell me, you know, do you ever think it's the alcohol? And I'd be like, it's not the alcohol. It's the it's the only thing that works, you know? So to identify with the literature, and I'm hearing people share in meetings, saying shit that I didn't know had express. Like, I couldn't tell you what I was feeling, but as soon as you said it, I was like, oh my God, you know? So I finally started laughing again. You know, it's funny, when you start getting a little bit better, you're able to laugh again. And so I just started healing. So at first, in the beginning, I was staying sober through fear of drinking again. I had surrendered to the point where I wanted to get better. And I remember I was sitting at this light, this 5-point light in Absecon, and I was sitting at the light, and I'm wondering, I'm like, why is everything working in my life right now? Like, I can't believe my life's going well. Like, it'd been so long since I felt any kind of forward momentum that without resistance, that it was like, and I realized I had like this little epiphany that it's because I was treating myself like an alcoholic. I wasn't a guy trying to quit drinking. You know, there's this guy Joe in my area, and he says, you know, dogs bark, birds fly, and alcoholics drink, you know. You can't quit being who you are, you know, and here I am trying to quit drinking, and of course it didn't work. So, but I can recover. I can be a recovered alcoholic. You guys taught me that. And so I'm staying sober on fear, but I'm coming home and my blood pressure's through the roof after like 6 months. Traffic sucks, lines are too long, no one's doing what I want them to do. I'm thinking about the future, I'm trying to fix my son and me's relationship by yesterday, and I haven't even seen him once. Like, I just got issues. And so what happened was, the second part of that first step, like, I wasn't able to really have that conversation until I was sober long enough to really feel uptight. I wasn't going to do any work until I felt so uncomfortable I had to do some work. That's just my experience. I mean, my home group is just like this. And there's speakers, I see guys come in who like came right in and went right into the steps. And I love it, because that's what I try to do if the guy is willing. However, I remember that it took me like 9 months to even comprehend the first drink. Like, I had to comprehend this allergy thing, you know, that it didn't matter that if I didn't drink beer for 15 years, as soon as I pick one up, if I was allergic to shellfish, my face is going to blow up if I eat shellfish. You know what I mean? It's the same thing. If I drink a beer, I'm going to want a second one. And I got this mind that just overpowers reason. And I had to learn that sober. You know, that's just my experience. But what happened was I was going to go crazy or drink. I reached a point where I was going to go crazy or drink. And I think only an alcoholic understands that. Because to anyone else, drinking would seem insane. You know? I don't know. I used to, step two was like a guardrail. You know what I mean? Like I was just kind of bouncing into it on the way forward. Like I used to like need to know everything. I used to be, think I was some intellectual, I was a bullshit artist. You know, I used to think I knew something about something. And I read all these books and I'd have all these debates with you and stuff. And I was raised one way, believed another. This didn't work. I was unable to sit still long enough to give anything a fair shot anyway. So anything that happened to me before AA was I had to let it go because it didn't matter. I would say my whole life, I really honestly feel like my life didn't begin until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Like everything got me to AA. Once I got to AA, my life began because everything else was, I was driven by alcohol. I was driven by fear. I didn't even know it. I was driven by resentment. Just like a meteor, man. I was just out of control. And so I used step two as like a guardrail into three. And three at the time, you know, I can talk like some step stuff right now. You know what I mean? But the truth is for me that my first sponsor, I made it to like the first six, seven steps with this guy. And I only felt like eight resentments my first time around. I was like, I'm not mad at anybody, right? And so I wrote down the eight people I hated the most. And we did like a fifth step where I told him my whole life story. It didn't even barely touch upon the eight people. And then he took me to six and seven. And then he picked up the first drink. And he wound up under the lash of alcoholism, got himself a bid. He's a colorful character. And he just got out, and I'm working with him now. You know what I mean? Like, so it's beautiful. You know, that's a blessing in my life. It's a bright spot in my life because I really love the guy, and I'm really happy he's doing well enough. I mean, we're not out of the woods yet. But so my second sponsor, I'm a year and a half sober. This guy disappears, and I'm in the wind. And I asked a dude or two, and they said no. You know, and I was like, I don't even know you could do that in AA. You know what I mean? So I had to keep asking, man. You know what I mean? I wasn't going to, like, look, man, whatever, dude. I've been down some dark alleys, you know. You saying no to me ain't gonna stop what I got to do. So I found a guy who had less time than me. I didn't know it at the time because I didn't care enough to ask. I just thought anyone in AA was sober all the time. Like, I didn't really understand. I had no depth perception at all. And but he had gone through the work, and he took me through the work, and he took me to a big book step study in Northfield and introduced me to some guys that were doing this thing. And they did the first three steps with me as they're outlined in the book. I got a notebook, and by the time that happened, I had hundreds of people on my resentment list. I could feel a lot more, and I was like a case of old dynamite. And I did a fifth step with him, and he said, Paul, do you want to live like this anymore? And I said, no, I don't. That was step six and seven, so I asked God to remove them from me. And I love to tell you that, you know, ever since then I've been walking, you know, problem-free. But that's not the case. Within 24 hours, I was playing guitar because I had just done this fifth step, and I'm at home, and I want to see my new magical spiritual powers and what kind of music this is going to lead to. And my phone starts ringing, and I'm in the middle of playing, and I'm looking at my phone, and I'm like, nah. And let's keep playing. They hang up, but they don't leave a message. They call right back, and it starts ringing again, another six, eight rings. I got so pissed off. I picked up the phone. I screamed, what? Do you know what I mean? Like, don't you know how busy I am right now? And they did not know that, and they didn't care either. And so I was like, all right, this is whatever. So we move into amends. It was just a good, like, just like drinking, man. I can't wish these things away. You can self-knowledge me until I'm purple. But the problem is my spirit is sick, and my spirit needs power. If I don't have any power, if I can't access a power greater than me, I'm just left with me. And me feeds on me. You know what I mean? I can't make myself happy, but I'll die trying. You know? And so I start making amends, and of course I make, like, the first three were like, all right, you know, this is cool. I make a couple more, and I start to just feel like I'm in, you've been going to this Big Book meeting for a year or so, and maybe not even felt like years. And I'm sharing, you know, I've been through the steps now, even though I'm a 9 and a half, because my sponsor had me reading 10 and 11 while I was doing that work, right? And I got to the point where I had it memorized. Like, I didn't need the book. I could read you 84 to 88 with no book, but I wasn't doing any of it. I didn't even know they were instructions. That's how crazy I was. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what I'm up against. Like, I just have no idea what's going on unless a sponsor helps me, because I'm bent, man, you know? And so I do like 9 and a half amends, and I'm sharing, like, you know, like, I always say it's a puppy dog mistake. I see it a lot. I've done it. I get it. And I got to the point where I started running out of patience, tolerance, care. I couldn't listen to anyone share anymore. I got sick of myself sharing, and I was going to go crazy or drink again. And that took like 9 months. And this guy that had helped me, like I said, he had less time than me, and he showed me what he knew, but I had kind of, I hate to say, outgrown him. But I remember going to him first with stuff, and he didn't have nothing for me. You know, he couldn't give me what he didn't have. And thank God at the time, a gentleman from Philadelphia had recently relocated into my area. And this woman in my home group, Maggie, Atlantic City Young People's, at the time was my home group. This is like 6 years ago. She said, "Paul, I want you to go up and introduce yourself to that guy right there." And I was at the coffee pot. I was like, "All right." You know, Maggie said something, you go do it, man. I grew up in a group where it's a great mixed crowd, and you respect the people that were there before you. She said, "Paul, do this." I didn't ask any questions. I just did it. I shook, outstretched my hand. To be honest with you, I thought he was a drum corps guy. You know, not that there's anything wrong with that. But that was the impression I was under. I just said, "Hey, what's up?" And then later heard him share, and I couldn't believe what I was hearing. It was just, you know, I don't know, man. I think when you, like, what's that saying? When the student's ready, the teacher appears. I had never heard anything like this in my life. You know, I grew up, we're in a small coastal town. I'm not saying that I got sober there. It's a great place. But I know that AA is international. Like, I'm not limited to my area. You know what I mean? You can listen to speaker CDs, big book studies, conferences. I don't limit myself to my area. And so this guy comes along and just blows the doors open for me. And I asked him after a couple weeks, I was going to go crazy or drink. I was like, "Listen, man, I'm in a spot. Like, can you help me? Like, can you take me through to work?" And and he said, "Yeah." And I called my sponsor at the time. I was like, "Listen, I'm eternally grateful for all your help. Thank you for all you've done for me. I was given an opportunity. I'm going to take it, and I'm going to switch lanes right now." And we've been friends ever since. We're cool. There were no hard feelings. But I told him before I started working with a new guy, you know, out of respect for all he'd done for me. And away we went. We went through. He took me through. It was a whole new experience. And what I didn't know, and now live by, is step 10, the one I was reading every day and had no idea what I was doing. Step 10, without step 10, I'm a snowball in hell. I don't know what anyone else is like. For me, my alcoholism, without God and AA, I don't have a chance. And I don't say that, I'm not selling anything. I'm just telling you from my personal experience, if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm a snowball in hell on a daily basis, dude. I don't have a shot. Not a shot. You know what I mean? So thank God that there's teachers in here. I had the willingness to ask for help. You know, that was key. And they tell us willingness is key. And steps, I continued my amends. He taught me the value of doing step 10 and he introduced me slowly but surely into 11-step practices. And then, you know, I always say the best 12-step, you know, some people, like, they're getting started out, like, I'm not giving advice per se, but I do like cling to this. I think it's really important. The best 12-step work you can do is 9, 10, and 11. If you're not working with anybody yet, because it's going to be yet, get your stuff together so when they come along, you can handle it. You know, you're ready for them. That's just how I feel about it. Instead of worrying, instead of taking a self-pity route, sharpen your swords. You know what I mean? Like, get ready. And that's been my experience. And I pretty much go through annually now. Last year was the first year I took off for a variety of reasons. I felt good enough to skip a year. I go through annually simply because, like he says, an annual house cleaning, you know, like the obvious places are clean, like, you know, for the most part. But you got to move the couch, you know. I'm going to find 8 cat toys under the couch, you know what I'm saying? I got Tupperware lids under the stove. You know, there's shit behind my headboard. You know what I mean? Like, you got to clean, keep this thing fit spiritual condition. And I'm an advocate. I will tell you this. If there's anything I can offer, step 10, writing inventory has saved my life. Like, it's one of the main elements. I know the mechanics don't keep me sober. I need God. I need to go to God. But without inventory, without writing, what I learned in the fourth step on the things, like, the fourth step is like, for me, it's like, dissecting a frog, like a dead frog, and, you know, like you used to do back in the day. It's the past. It's there. It's done. You already know about it. It happened. Yeah, you can mine it for a ton of information, and you can't really, you have to do it. You have to get rid of it. And you have to learn from it. However, step 10 is live action time as it's happening. And I have no experience with life at all as it's happening. So all the stuff that I learned through these, like, first 9 steps, now as life's coming at me, I got to learn to be emotionally balanced. And if you're anything like me, that's a very challenging situation. You know what I'm saying? I'm self-centered to the extreme still. You know what I mean? I feel like I'm late because I woke up, like, in the middle of my life, and I got economic insecurity. I'm growing as a person. Like, socially, I have to re-enter society. I have to be responsible. All these things I've never done, you know, simultaneously. So the good news is, with God and AA, all this stuff is doable. And not only doable, I'm living the best days of my life. There's days where, I mean, kind of getting a little ahead of myself there. I will tell you that, let's just finish up the step 10 thing. Without putting pen to paper, my personal experience, if I don't put pen to paper, I just can't see the truth. I can't do it. Before I came to this meeting tonight, I had 2 rocks in my shoe that I thought, I was hoping I'd be sober long enough to be able to process without putting pen to paper. And the first one, it was with an individual I haven't really dealt with before. And something happened like 2 weeks ago that rubbed me the wrong way. But it was minor, but I'm alcoholic, you know what I mean? And I didn't forget it, but I tried to let it go. You know, like a lot of people I see do, who don't write. And maybe they can, maybe they can't. I don't know. I think they pay for it when they don't. But that's just my experience, because when I don't, I pay for it. It might be different for them. But what happened was, yesterday, that same person who I didn't write on did something that I didn't like also. And that one was legit. It wasn't just me being immature. And I wanted to just let that go. I don't want to have low tolerance. Do you know what I'm saying? But I'm driving out here. Crosses my mind a couple times. You know, I've got it made, dude. I just came back from Florida, visiting my son. I live with my girlfriend. She's a great person. I have a great job. I have vacation, health insurance. Like, I'm going to school. AA is like, without Alcoholics Anonymous, I told you, I'm a snowball in hell. I'm doing so much in one day. I'm a guy who used to go to CVS at 10 a.m. hungover, and if there were 2 people in line in front of me, and it was taking too long, I'd have a nervous breakdown. And I'd be like, that's it for me for the day, you know? And I'd start drinking. So I'm doing like 50 things a day, you know what I mean? And all of them are great, and all of them are new, and all of them are, you know, blessings. But without, like I said, I'm driving and this guy's kicking his can down the road. I don't want to be, but I am. And then I take a nap and I wake up and this I'm still thinking about this dude. So I'm like, you know what? I told you, this is at like 5:45 tonight. I sat down at the desk. I got out my 10-step notebook. I keep in my book bag. And I wrote out the two things that were bothering me. One of my sponsees had an appointment tonight with him. And I canceled initially. And then I asked him if he had 15 minutes. Because he was the guy I could get a hold of and I trust him. And he does it the same way I was taught to do it. And he was very helpful to me. You know, a guy who I helped learn how to do this helped me get free of some ridiculous stuff that, you know, doesn't matter. You know, is anything big or small? You know what I mean? In the spiritual world, like, if I don't clean house, if I don't process this stuff, in like 3 months, all this stuff compounds on top of each other, and like a feather just starts coming down. You know what I mean? And that thing lands on me, and I get a case of the efforts, and life isn't fair. And I throw it all down the toilet, you know. Is it worth 5 minutes of writing inventory? And I've never put pen to paper and not seen something I could not see if I had not put pen to paper. You know what I mean? So please, just, if you're not used to doing that, practice it. I highly recommend it. And meditation, for me, the unforeseen stability. I'm no expert, man. Believe me. I'm not even close. And but since I started practicing first, I didn't start for a few years. I don't know how I survived without it, like anything else in my life. But once I put it into play, I started out like 2 minutes on my cell phone. I'd set my timer for 2 minutes. I knew that if, like, I'm one of these guys where if I'm not astral traveling, like on day two, screw it, it's not worth it. You know what I mean? And I've never even asked to try. I don't even know why the hell I think that's like a requirement for meditation. But that's what I show up here with. All these old ideas, all this nonsense. So I start for 2 minutes, and I sit down in my room quietly for 2 minutes, and like a minute and 57 seconds, I have this intuitive thought. You know, it just came to me. And I wouldn't have had that had I not taken the 2 minutes to just sit quiet and practice this meditation thing that I've never done. I was like, oh, all right, you know, I see where this is beneficial. So I kept doing 2 minutes. It didn't happen every time, but I found myself becoming more at ease and just a little peaceful. I was slower to, you know, my blood pressure took longer. I was able to add more tolerance. And so then I did 3 minutes. And then after a few weeks, I went to 5 minutes. I got crazy. I went up to 5 minutes. And I did that for a couple months, and I got so comfortable with 5 minutes, I went to 7 minutes. You know what I mean? And then 11. And then I went, you know, then now it's a pleasure. If I'm off, I can't wait to meditate. I'll meditate as long or as short as I want. Right now I'm in like a 10-minute thing, give or take. I used to do 15. You know, I don't worship any ceremonies or anything. I just try to go with my heart, you know. And, so, but the reason I'm even saying that is the unforeseen benefits of that. I'm thinking one thing's going to happen because I have no experience with it, and I'm an idiot, I'm prejudiced, you know what I mean? And but I let go and I try it, and it turns out there's all these benefits over here that I didn't even know would happen or why they would happen, or, like, you know what I mean? Like, I know something. And but I'm so much more calmer, and I'm more enjoyable, I'm peaceful, like I'm just more stronger, period. I have more spiritual endurance since I've started meditating. And, you know, step 12, man, I got a few texts tonight. Step 12, alcoholism's a nasty, nasty thing, man. I love Bob Darrow talks about, it doesn't show up on an MRI, but it's as deadly as anything out there. You know what I mean? And that's my experience. I'll share one thing. I know I'm pressing my luck, but I'm feeling good about it. I got cancer in 2013, right? And I'm at University of Penn, and throat cancer. Long story short, I'm in a doctor's office. I'm scared to death. I don't know what's about to happen. And it's really great surgery, man. God put the things in place. I went from one doctor to the next doctor to the next doctor. And I'm in his office, and he mentioned something like, well, if things go well, you'll be able to do most of the things you did before. That's what he hits me with, right? So I'm like, what's that mean? Like, what do you mean most of the things? You know what I mean? Like, what's about to happen? And he says, but this is real. Like, I mean, I'm scared to death. Like, on some super, super real shit. Sorry about that. And he stops what he's doing. Like, because I'm asking him all these fear-based questions. And he stopped what he was doing. And he gave me his full attention. I could tell this was the only time he was going to do it. And he said, how do you think you're doing now? And I didn't say anything. And that's like how stuck I was. Like, he goes, you have cancer. He goes, when we're done, you won't have cancer. So anything that happens will be better than what you have now. Right? Simple enough. Right? So I nodded. I'm like, okay. Right? So that's what I think like AA is like. You know what I'm saying? It's like you come in here, like you don't know nothing about alcoholism, and you look at these things, and you're like, what? You know? And you're like, ah, I don't know. You know? But it's like, dude, how do you think you're doing right now, man? Like, you're a mess. Like, on a good day. You know, you'd be lucky to be a mess. And I'm telling you, just give it a shot. Like, one of the things I said was, if I don't do everything they'll do, I never know if it worked or not. And I can tell you, Alcoholics Anonymous is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me, man. And if you're here, please stay. And that's all I got. Thanks.